41. Lugath Jor hugged a bend in the Bainama River, a rich, dark ribbon of water that meandered through the central plains of Elfkina like a constrictor, curling around the village set out in a brown crescent on its western bank. A dozen squat, mud and grass huts sat well protected within the small peninsula created by the oxbow of the forever-changing river, beneath a small grass-covered hill that rose a few hundred feet behind the village. Vine-lashed piers, made of roughly cut logs, jutted out into the water below the huts like fingers of a gnarled old hand. It was here that the villagers got into their tiny flat-bottomed keos and paddled out into the center of the river to string finely woven mesh nets to catch ijuk, river turtles, and barajog. The catch was then brought back to the piers, where the women gutted and filleted the fish, tossing the entrails back into the water to thank the gods for their bounty. The heads of the fish, however, were taken to the top of the hill and burned there, allowing the spirits of the animals to escape in the smoke and be reborn in the river with the next rain. Legend told of a star falling from the heavens in that place at the very birth of the world. So they followed the ritual, and the fish remained plentiful and their lives peaceful. And then the Sigurs came. The soldiers planted a pretty green and silver flag on top of the hill and claimed it for the empire. They labored for months to raise a high mud wall all the way around the top of the hill, festooned with cactus thorn, and then sat in it, staring out at the river. The Elfkynan told the Sigurs they should not build there, for it would anger the gods. They told them the story of the star. "And where is this star?" the Sigurs had asked. "Did it fall back up into the sky?" The village witch made the appropriate warding signs and warned the Sigurs that the star would one day return. The Sigurs laughed and bought the fish heads from the women and used them to make soup. The spirits would have their revenge one day, the witch had said. The witch never lived to see the spirits' revenge. A cold, black arrow, crafted by a magic far older than hers, pierced her breast, killing her instantly. Basina covered her mouth with her hand as she looked down at the remains of the witch. A twisted black tree grew through her to reach its misshapen branches out to intertwine with the branches of others of its kind, dotted all around the village and fortress, forming a U against the river. The trees were already taller than Basina, their mettled leaves moving menacingly, though no wind blew or rain fell. There were hundreds of trees, though it was difficult to tell where one ended and another began. She closed her eyes and immediately sensed their roots crawling deeper into the earth. The land here was changed, far more so than the vines where the Ferrogs had sheltered. Her magic would not be sufficient to destroy them. Not like his. It was a sobering thought. She opened her eyes and knelt on the earth, placing a hand on the ground. It was like touching cold iron.
"In all my years of reporting, I have never seen anything more foreboding," Raleigh said, angling her sketchbook to catch the moonlight as she drew the black forest that now grew where Lugath Jor had once stood. The two women stood by Raleigh's wagon on the edge of the village, while a scouting party moved through the gap in the trees by the river to check out the fortress within.
"It fills one with a particular sense of dread, as if winter has arrived early. Great and terrible things are bound to follow. Oh my, yes."
Basina took one more look at the dead witch, knowing that could easily be her, and turned away. She was shocked to see a tiny smile on Raleigh's face.
"Raleigh, don't you see? Kanawha and the Iron Elves are the harbinger of the coming storm. I thought when he felt the natural order he would finally understand."
"Or when he felt you?" Raleigh asked. "Do not give up on the Major, Vecina. He cares deeply for you, even if he has trouble showing it. Love is a powerful weapon, but like all weapons, it depends on how one uses it."
I know he cares, but he loves the Iron Elves more. He would do anything for them, she said, bitterness lacing her words.
As you would for your land and your people. The two of you are more alike than either will admit. As soon as we deal with this little matter, she said, waving at the trees, I see I'm going to have to improve my chaperoning skills.
Little matter? Raleigh, the very world hangs in the balance, and you talk as if you enjoy it.
Raleigh stopped sketching and turned to look at her, all trace of a smile gone.
Of course I do not enjoy this. But I am a reporter of events, an observer of all things, and most importantly, a writer. I suffer from a disease few, fortunately, will ever contract. I need to be where fire burns hottest or the wind blows coldest. It's there where the tapestry of the world gets burned and ripped to shreds and another is woven new, that history lives and dies. Our major, whether it be fate or by his own design, and the Iron Elves, and I dare say us too, have become one of those places.
As she talked, her face flushed, and the years of hard living seemed to melt away, revealing a youthful, bright soul, yet one tempered by the sadness of having seen more than any person should. Realizing Vecina was staring at her, she turned back to her sketchbook. Her quill hovered above the paper, though, and she tilted her head to the side.
Pray, my child, that you never catch this disease of mine. It is both pleasure and horror, and while I would not wish it on anyone, I would fight with every ounce of my strength if someone were to try to cure me of it. But enough of my life story, Raleigh said, scratching her nose with the feather end of her quill, while looking at Vecina. You were telling me about the star.
Vecina shivered.
I shouldn't have said anything.
Raleigh cackled lightly, turning back to her drawing. Her hand moved with quick, fluid strokes across the page.
Ah, but you did. I had no idea a star could talk, or that it would be so feeble as to need to hide itself from view.
I do not know how to explain it. It is a feeling. The star has been gone a long time, as have all the stars. It is energy, but still weak after centuries of being gone.
Hearing it said out loud made the entire situation all sound a bit foolish.
Indeed, Raleigh said, clucking as she turned over the page and began a new sketch. And you are sure this is the Eastern Star?
I was, she said truthfully. It comes to me when I call. It even warned me of the danger Kanawha would become, and we have seen it come to pass. This regiment is cursed. The taint of the Shadow Monarch's evil is upon them.
Raleigh shrugged her shoulders and continued to draw.
Perhaps. Then again, power is most often neutral, and can be used for good or ill. It depends on the wielder. I have faith in our major, as troubled as he is. For that matter, I have faith in you. You could have burned the Ferrogs to a cinder, but you chose not to. That is no small thing, free will.
Raleigh paused again in her sketching, and cast a sidelong glance at Vecina.
Let me know when you speak to this star again. I'd love the chance to interview it for my story.
Vecina wanted to say no, then stopped herself. Why not? If this truly was the Eastern Star, why should it be secret? She remembered the touch of Critton's hand on her skin, and more riddles emerged.
Questions to ponder, my dear, questions to ponder, Raleigh said softly,
the scritch of her quill across paper starting up again. Vecina knew it was time she took the correspondent's advice.
The trees won't burn with just fire, and we don't have enough powder to destroy the entire forest, sir,
Lorien said, pointedly not looking at Kanawha as he directed his answers to the prince. Lorien gripped his halberd as if it were the only thing keeping him from falling.
For some reason, the area in and around the fortress is clear. It looks like they killed the soldiers there, then dragged their bodies out of the fort to enclose the fortress in the village. We are completely encircled, except for right here.
Right here was a 20-yard gap between the river and the tree line on the other side of the road leading into Lugath Jor. They stood in the middle of the road, looking up at the destroyed fortress. Kanoa waited for the prince to comprehend the folly of entering the forest-ringed position, but the prince only nodded.
"We really should pull back, sir," Kanoa finally said. "We'd be walking into a trap if we go in there. There's no sign of the star or the previous viceroy. He may have already found it."
The prince sniffed and shook his head. He rested a boot on an overturned drum of the 35th foot, its stretched hide skin torn and covered in the blood of the young boy who had carried it. Oblivious, he looked up the hill, crossing his arms on his knee as he bent forward in what Kanoa was sure the prince thought was a martial pose.
"You see that fortress, Major?"
he said, pointing to the crumbled walls on top of the hill. His boot heel echoed hollowly on the drum, a ghostly accompaniment to his proud speech.
"That will be our bastion. What better place to plant the colors and make our stand? Raise the banner of Kalar high, and let the enemy know that Lugath Jor is once again in Imperial hands. The star is here, Major. I can feel it. It's waiting for the right moment to reveal itself. Well, when the colors of the Prince of Kalar fly over Lugath Jor, the enemy will be drawn here like moths to a flame. And when they show themselves, they will dash themselves against our defenses and be defeated. This forest," he said, sweeping a hand dismissively at the ugly black growth that even now writhed around them, "shall be their undoing. They'll have to funnel through this gap to get to the fortress, and when they do, we will have them."
"Elfkainen rebels are one thing, but this," Kanoa said, looking around at the forest, "this is something else. The 35th foot didn't stand a chance." Bits of uniform fluttered from jagged branches, reminding him of dockside send-offs as wives and girlfriends waved their handkerchiefs and dabbed at tears for soldiers never to come home again.
"Lack of moral fiber, Major," the prince replied. "Troops grow soft on garrison duty, without a firm hand to keep them in line. Clearly that was the case with the 35th. Obviously caught by surprise, no doubt. Well, the Iron Elves won't be caught napping, not while I'm in charge."
The prince stood up straight and patted Kanoa on the back.
"Have heart, Major. The trees, as fascinating as they are of no direct concern to us."
He waved at the forest as if it was just one more exotic bit of flora to be catalogued, an example that would be uprooted, tagged, and carefully wrapped and taken back to Selwyn to be planted in the royal maze.
"If this is the best the Shadow Monarch can do, then she is already defeated. Don't you see? The forest has actually strengthened our defenses by providing us with a wall far stronger than those of the fort. We'd be foolish not to make use of her mistake."
Lorien said something under his breath. Prince Tyken turned to look at him.
"You have something to add, RSM?"
Lorien started to shake his head, then stood up a little straighter and answered.
"It's just that they're men, sir. This place is cursed, and it has them spooked. They don't understand what's going on. They're simple soldiers. They just want to do their duty and get home again. No one signed up for this."
The last part was said staring directly at Kanoa. The prince, as usual, chose to hear it differently.
"If there are cowards in the ranks, RSM, we shall deal with them accordingly. Surely this regiment is made of tougher stuff. Surely no little old elf witch can scare them so."
Kanoa could see Lorien was on the verge of saying something he couldn't take back.
"What the RSM meant, sir," Kanoa said, walking a few paces off to the side to draw the prince's attention, "is that none of them have ever come up against anything like this before. And it has them excitable, eve of battle and all."
The prince smiled.
"Got their blood up, has it? Good. Still, wouldn't do to have them on edge for too long. We should set them to some task at once. Burn off a bit of that energy."
"Very good, sir. I'll have scouting parties sent out at once to determine the likely route of the enemy forces. Perhaps you'd care to oversee the defenses in the fort? It could be that your presence there alone will be enough for the star to reveal itself, Kanawha offered.
Excellent, Major. Excellent. Have my headquarters set up in the fortress at once, and then report to me when you've disposed of the scouts. I'll want to go over our defenses in depth, he said, clapping his hands together in conclusion. Rally! Someone find Rally and have her meet me in the fortress. We have some exploring to do.
He walked over to his steed, took the reins from a private, and mounted, spurring his reluctant horse through the gap and into a canter up the hill. Kanawha was momentarily speechless. He stared at the trees as they continued to squirm and entwine themselves, thickening the black wall that surrounded the fortress while leaving the gap intact. It sounded like bones being grated in a pestle.
"Has the magic taken your senses?"
Lorien asked, coming to stand directly in front of Kanawha.
"You know as well as I do that retreating into that fortress is a death sentence."
His voice shook as he spoke, his eyes slightly unfocused. Kanawha raised a hand and motioned for Lorien to follow him. They walked several hundred yards away from the trees before Kanawha stopped.
"We don't know who or what might be listening, so from here on out, watch what you say."
Lorien looked back at the trees, a new horror dawning on him.
"You mean they can hear us? Did you feel that when you burned them?"
Kanawha shook his head.
"I don't know what they are capable of, but all the same, keep everyone away from the trees."
He reached out a hand and rested it on Lorien's shoulder. The man's eyes widened, but he held firm.
"If it comes to it, I can deal with the trees. In fact, I suspect you and the regiment will be able to as well."
"I don't want this, Major. I don't,"
he said, hanging his head.
"I'm not one of those that fancies magic and all its dark mysteries. I'm already sensing things around me. It's not natural. Rocks and dog spiders coming back are one thing, but men turned into trees."
The fear in his voice cut Kanawha deeply.
"Which is why we have to hold together. What happened to the 35th foot will not happen to us. On that you have my word." "I don't fully understand it," he said, his hand straying to his chest. "But we have a power to fight this. You have to trust me."
"I wish it gone. Tell me how to get rid of it."
Kanawha realized with a start that there was no answer.
"I made a vow when I came back that I would protect the Iron Elves no matter what, and I intend to keep that promise. When we are done here, I will take this regiment back out of the wilderness, and we'll see what we can do about putting things right."
It sounded hollow, and Kanawha could tell that Lorien was unconvinced, but the RSM pulled himself together and nodded.
"I'll hold you to it,"
Lorien said, saluting. Then he turned and walked away. There was a thunderclap, followed by a blade of lightning, and a hard rain began to fall.